Hi everybody, I'm Dennis Prager. Welcome to my home. This is my home. This is my study. Some people call it a man cave, but I tend to share it with a woman who's my wife. So it's a man cave with woman who's not on camera now, but should be one day. I should interview my wife one day. If it's going to be my home, you should get to meet everybody. My bulldog, my basset hound, my I don't know what he is. We have three. Anyway, it's great to be with you. These fireside chats are unique because they're completely unscripted. It's completely spontaneous, and people seem to resonate to it because I talk to you from my heart, from my mind, and even the dogs sometimes get into the action. The last time we had almost 500,000 views, which is wonderful because I think that there are very important things being said here. So anyway, welcome to the house. It's a very special day for me. Literally 10 minutes ago, everybody in this room, there are about five other people here from Prager University, can testify to this. I just saw, it just got into my hands 10 minutes ago. The Work of My Life, a commentary on the first five books of the Bible. This is just one of them. This is on the second book called Exodus. It's called The Rational Bible because I use reason to explain the greatest book ever written. And I believe it'll change your life, whether you are an atheist or deeply religious. And I hope you can get it. I hope you will get it. You can pre-order it. I know it sounds like a sales pitch. I can only say this. Nobody writes a Bible commentary to get rich. But I do want to touch lives. That's why I never ran for office. I thought about it, but I realized I was much more interested in influence than power. I have no interest in having power over other people. It's part of the reason I'm a conservative. It's why conservatives have a built-in disadvantage. They want less power. In any event, This is what just came out. I'm very, very touched by it. It's sort of like a book is like a child. You work very hard to produce it and to raise it, and then there it is. And that's how I feel towards my books. So I always open up with a subject, sometimes one in the news, sometimes one that's just on my mind. So let me say just a few words, and it really will be a few words, on all the demonstrations that are taking place with regard to... Why am I having a problem with my lighter? You know why? Because my lighter knows it's on camera and it's very, very sensitive. Oh well, I can't believe it. It's working beautifully till now. By the way, I've been smoking a pipe as long as I have a cigar since my late teens. And I alternate between them. Most of the times I've been on this with my cigar. Because it's my study and good man, thank you. Okay, so my friends, we have young people all over the country going out of school, not being considered missing class even, not being truant, nothing. Just, in fact, often very greatly praised by their teachers in school for going out and demonstrating for more gun control. I don't have a problem with young people feeling strongly about issues. I have a problem with young or old people only feeling. Life is a battle very often between feelings and thoughts. I call it the battle between the brain and the mind. The brain gets us in a lot more trouble than the mind does. The brain is where the primal feelings are. I'll give you a very simple example of the conflict between brain and mind. Brain wants to stay in bed all day or get up very late. Mind says you have to go to work. Brain says, I want that dessert. Mind says, you'll gain too much weight if you keep having dessert. There's a battle in life. It's really between the primal feelings that we have and our thought process. That's the unique thing. Animals have brains, but not much by way of mind. It's not an insult. I love my dogs. I just want to make that clear. It's not an insult to say that something that is not built with something doesn't have it. So on this gun control issue, the feelings are, let's control more guns, let's pass more laws, Now, I'm not an NRA, I'm not a big gun enthusiast, I come to this with the about as clear a conscience as possible. I want two things. I want to honor the Second Amendment, and I want to stop as many killings as possible. We only have right now in our schools, overwhelmingly, just the brain is talking, more laws, that's a feeling. Here is the question that I pose, because I'll be for a law. I want to know what laws would have been passed that would have stopped any of the school massacres that we have had. That's all. That's what I want to know. There are 300 million or so guns, maybe probably more, in America. If we tomorrow said all guns are illegal, do you believe that there would be fewer killings? I believe there would be more, because then only the bad guys could get guns. In real life in America, we have conflict. The mind understands that there are conflicting ideals that are involved. Why do we have a Second Amendment? All right, let me deal with that. The United States was founded on the belief that the more power government has, the more likely it will become eventually tyrannical. This is the only country in the world and in world history founded on the principle of limited government. I know if you're in school, you haven't been taught that. It is a tragedy that you haven't. This is what has made America the land of the free. That's why we were given the Statue of Liberty by France. Why did they send it to America? Why didn't they send it to Germany or to Britain or to Portugal or to Japan or to Africa or Asia? Other Asian countries aside from Japan. Why? Because America has embodied liberty. And the reason for the liberty is government has been limited. But as America shifts leftward in its political orientation, by definition, leftward means more and more government. Less and less power to the individual, more and more power to the state. I don't trust the state because I don't trust human nature. I know that the bigger the government, the more corruption there will be, the greater the likelihood there is to repress people. Every tyranny takes people's guns away. Every tyranny, it's the first thing they do, because then they can't be opposed. Now, I don't want people owning bazookas or surface-to-air missiles, and we should have a very fair debate on the issue of semi-automatic weapons. I'm all for all of these debates, but the kids in the schools are not getting a debate. There's nobody coming in the school and saying anything analogous to what you just heard from me. Wait a minute. There are competing values here. We have to understand what they are. The vast majority of Americans who own guns use them for utterly legitimate purposes, including vast numbers of acts of self-defense. But those aren't reported nearly as often as the massacres are. So it's important to use our minds, not just, oh, I hate massacres, therefore I want more gun laws. Maybe more gun laws is a good idea. Let's have the debate. But almost no school has the debate. That's the problem. And in the meantime, our fellow citizens of the left, the Democratic Party, which was once liberal but is now left, is thrilled. Because they could say, look, Republicans don't care. And that's what they say. Republicans don't care about kids getting killed. Isn't that bizarre? Does anybody, any one of you watching, believe that? I'm a Republican. Do you think I love my children less than a Democrat loves his or her children? Isn't that absurd? I have grandchildren. Think I want my grandchildren endangered? The thought, when I think of what happens to parents when they lose a child, I know so many parents who've lost children because the nature of my work has brought me into contact with them, and I talk about it on the radio, and they contact me, and I meet with them. That pain is for those of us who haven't lost a child, that's the nightmare. The issue isn't who loves children. The issue is what will protect children best. What can we do that works and that honors the ability of people in America to in fact have guns? I honor that Second Amendment. It was founded for a reason. So that's why I speak about feelings versus thinking, the mind versus the brain. I wish every school would allow a debate. Just sending kids out to demonstrate is not the way in which you make a better society. Of that, I am certain. So we can talk about that, and we will, I'm sure, over time. But my request of all schools is please have a debate. There really are two sides among people who all love their children. Okay? Are we good, everybody? Good. Now time for your questions. Okie doke. All right. Good. That's good. Okay. Hi. Tanner, 22. That's the age. Not Tanner, the 22nd. Easley, South Carolina. Is there any advice you can give us to helping my wife get along with my parents? Is it a necessity for a healthy marriage, or is it something out of my control? Well, let me tell you something. One of the sobering lessons of life is we control very little except ourselves. And I wish people did control themselves more. We can't control in the final, maybe you can control a five-year-old, and even that's hard. But it's a maturing realization. You can't control your children. You can't control your spouse. You can't control your parents. You can control yourself. You try to do as good a life as possible. It would be really nice if your wife got along with your parents, but without knowing any of the details as to why there is any alienation, I don't know what to advise. My general belief, I am a father-in-law. Okay, my older son is married, and my aim, I'm being very open here, I have to admit, my aim has been, I want my daughter-in-law, and for that matter my son, but I want my daughter-in-law to be able to say that her husband's dad, that's me, is the easiest father-in-law in the world. That's what I would like. And you know, there's best dad in the world cups and cards for Father's Day. I would like easiest father-in-law in the world. I try to just not be a burden on my child and my daughter-in-law. And I it's unbelievably easy because they're so wonderful and they're loving and I'm very lucky. But if it was a tougher situation, I would still aim for that. I would do whatever I could, including act. I'm a behaviorist. For the sake of the grandchildren, that is the in-laws, right? The grandchildren, they have, if you have children, they have grandchildren. For the sake of the grandchildren, for the sake of what's known in Hebrew, it's a great phrase, shalom bayit, the peace of the house. It's an unbelievably big value in Judaism, and it was inculcated in me from a very early age in a religious school. For the sake of peace in the house, you swallow pride, you swallow ego, and you just act as nicely as possible. My grandmother, my father's mother, was a tough woman. Give you two examples. So she did not like my mother. She didn't like my mother because she married her son. Anybody who would have married her son was not good enough for him. Okay, fine, may she rest in peace. I loved her, and that's fine. So when my parents would have the grandparents over every Sunday for lunch, they pick them up, bring them to the house. My mother would prepare this elaborate meal every single Sunday. She was a great cook and she prepared a great meal, and it was a lot of work. And almost every week at the meal, my grandmother would praise the cantaloupe or the grapefruit. My mother made all these dishes, and at the end, my grandmother would say, "Oh, the cantaloupe was delicious." And it was hilarious to me because it was so insulting, obviously. My mother did not make cantaloupe, God did, or nature did. You choose. So that's just one little example. Here's a bigger example. I was about 9, 10 years old, and I was talking to my grandmother on the phone, and she was angry at my mother, and she said, she had a Yiddish accent, and she said, "Your mother is Hitler." Now, I thank God, I remember thinking, this is the funniest thing in the world. My grandmother is calling my mother Hitler. I mean, I thought it was hilarious. She didn't mean it to be hilarious. And I remember covering the phone, the mouthpiece on the phone, and yelling, "Hey, Dad, Grandma called Mom Hitler." And that was it. It is normal for there not to be great relations. It's the minority of homes where in-laws all get along great, or even parents and children. So just act nice. That's all. You don't have to win them over. Just be calm, be nice, swallow your pride. That's what I would argue. If nothing works, then nothing works. Then you love your wife up, and that's it. Haven 21 in Lucas, Michigan, was a Prager Force member. Thank you. Should parents pay or help pay for their child's college tuition? Yeah, I don't see why not. If they can afford it, I don't want parents to go broke. That's what bothers me. If they can afford it, that's one thing. Excuse me. That's the issue. I know parents who have put their houses up for sale or borrowed on their house and have no more cash to send their kid to college. It's a waste of money. Go to a cheap, this is my view, my recommendation to parents. If you're going to pay, send your child to as cheap a college as you can afford, or as expensive a college as you can afford, whichever way you want to look at it. Ben, 16, Lancaster, California, also in Prager Force. Hiya, Ben, thank you. Do you have a favorite film score? I do, actually. This is amazing that I do, because there are a lot of great film scores. And if you were to ask me what's my favorite piece of classical music, I would name 10. I couldn't do one. But I do have one, and I bet almost none of you, even big film score aficionados, don't even know about this. All the Pretty Horses. It is one of the magnificent pieces of music. I go crazy for it. Everyone I have recommended it to has gotten the CD or downloaded it or whatever they do, and they couldn't believe that they didn't know about it. All the Pretty Horses. That's my favorite. There are a lot of many that are tied for second. And they are let's see, Enrico Morricone, I believe that's his name. Everything he wrote is magnificent. And let's see, who did John Williams is a genius. Hans sorry. Hans Zimmer is a genius. I mean, there are quite a number. I am into classical music, but the greatest music being written today is not classical. It's film. Okay. Matt, 25, also Prager Force, Camarillo, California. Should a woman ever propose to a man? Why not? I mean, I'm traditional. I think that the guy should take the initiative in these things. I think women like when men take the initiative. They like, strong and affirmative men. But if the guy is dawdling for some reason, and you know that he really does want to marry you, then, and if you just say, "Hey, you know what? I think we should get married," I don't think she should, get on her knee and go, "Will you marry me?" But generally speaking, men like to do the chasing and conquering, and women like to be chased and conquered. That's our natures. Male and female nature are not the same, but they are complementary. However, having said that, whatever works, works. I'm very pragmatic. Okay? Now, I wonder who asked that? Who asked that? He's 16 years old. No, 25. Oh. I wonder if it's your case, Matt. Daniel, 18 in London. Hey, Dennis. Hey. You greatly helped me find a meaning in my life, yet I am struggling to find meaning in my religion. How can I embrace Judaism and use it to better myself as an individual and make this world a better place? Thank you very much. I have a great number of lectures on Judaism, which you might look up, but I'll tell you, this is, I'm so glad you asked. It enables me to, this came into my hands just this last hour. This is the work, this is decades of work into this. Explaining the greatest book ever written, the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, as Jews call it, or just the first five books of the Bible, as everybody calls it. It's the rational Bible. It's just about to come out. You could pre-order it. If this will tell you, this tells you what you need to know to answer that question. And it's called the rational Bible because my vehicle to God and faith and religion is completely through reason. It's a blessing and a curse. I don't take things just on faith. It has to make sense to me, or I have a big problem with it. And the beauty is, I show how everything does make sense, and that brings me to God. And it certainly speaks as well about what is the mission of the Jewish people. Most Jews don't know if they have a religious mission. Christians know they have a religious mission to bring the world to Christ. Muslims know they have a religious mission to make the world Muslim. But if you ask Jews, what is your religious mission? Many Jews have a secular mission to bring the world to social justice, which is why many Jews are on the left. That's their definition. But the answer is to bring the world to the Ten Commandments, to the God of the Ten Commandments, and to the Ten Commandments. Because if the world just lived by the Ten Commandments, and this book has 17,000 words explaining the Ten Commandments, but it's written as clearly as I am speaking to you now. All right, Armando, 21, LA, California, PragerForce. Good, thank you. Should men always pay on the first date? I think so, yeah. Listen, everything has exceptions. I could understand that there be, for whatever reason, there might be an exception. Generally speaking, I want men to be men. I want men to be strong. I want men to make a statement. When a man pays, this is my opinion, when a man pays on a date, he is saying in a very subtle but a powerful way, I aim in the final analysis at some point in my life to take care of a woman, to take care of a family. Women love that thought. First of all, they love men who have ambition. I don't mean overly ambitious and just preoccupied with money. That's an empty soul. But a man should care about these things, and it's a subtle statement. Now, he might be paying it in the hope that he'll get sex. That's another possibility. But she is allowed to say no. I don't understand why that is complex. It's gotten complex, but I don't understand why it is. But other than that, yes, I do think that he should pay on the first date. Don't go to a fancy restaurant. My opinion is that I would love to do a test. Would women prefer, let's say, 25-year-old and older women, all right? Which is the great majority of women. Would they prefer, if they're dating, to go on a date with a man who will pay for the dinner or the lunch or whatever they're going to at an inexpensive restaurant, or split the meal with her at an expensive restaurant? It's an interesting question. I know that I would much prefer to pay for the meal at Chipotle than to go to a fancy French restaurant and say, well, let's see, you had the burger and I had the fish, but you had the red wine and I only had a Coke. That's really charming. God, is that is sexy. Okay. Let's see here. Matt, six? Did we miss a digit? Is he 60? 16? He's 16. I know, we get 6-year-olds, but they don't generally send in questions. That was changed fast. Who did that? Will? Will, will you quit bragging? I can't believe it. He's sitting there
He
bragging that
was.
he changed it to 16 in 10 seconds.
He's the one who messed it up in the first place.
Will Witt. That is hilarious. Just in case I didn't know, his name came up. By the way, Will is, he's like a sort of media star right now, and it's going to his head. Matt, 16, Kansas City, Missouri. What advice would you give me to ensure that I pass down my morals to my children? Okay, I go, oh boy, I have a speech. Go to PragerStore.com. I'm not trying to sell you anything. It's just like nothing. You just download it. It's a few, I don't know, like $10. I don't know what it is. But I have a speech on how to raise good children. And so you'll, it's at least an hour. Off the top of my head, here are just a few things. One is you have to believe that their character is more important than anything else about them. So you have to believe their character, their moral character, ethical character, is more significant than their grades, than their athletic ability, than their brains. Do you want to say to yourself, my son or daughter is brilliant, or my son or daughter is a truly good person? Which is more important for you to say? So, one of the biggest reasons parents aren't raising good kids, or really good kids, not saying everybody's raising evil kids, of course, is that it's not the number one priority. The number one priority is getting that kid on the honor roll. That drives me crazy. My son is on the honor roll at the Paducah Academy. I don't give a damn, frankly. There are a lot of kids with great grades who don't have great character. There's no correlation between great grades and great character. None. Okay? There just isn't. Any more than there is between great looks and great character. But looks are important and grades are important. There are a whole hundred things are important. I agree. This is the most important. And you have to convey that to your children. This is what matters to me. If you cheat on a test and get into Harvard thanks to that, I rather you go to a community college and never cheat. That's what you have to pass on to your child. So that's the most important aspect, I think, of passing or is it the number one? Do you believe it is the number one thing in your child's life? If you do, you will communicate it regularly. Why didn't you say thank you to that person? Gratitude is a moral category. Mark 14, Ontario, Canada. It's so it's insulting to Canadians, I have to admit. Ontario, where is Ontario? Well, there is an Ontario, California, that's true. Anyway, we should have put the Matt, not Matt, Will, we should have put the city as well. Okay? Ontario is a province, so we need the city too. But it's okay. If God is omniscient, how do we have free will? If God knows the future, that doesn't deprive you of free will. God is outside of time, and we know from Einstein that time is relative. So I have no problem with that. God knows what you've done because he already stands outside of time. He knows what will happen. If indeed he knows what will happen. I'm not certain, by the way, that God does know what will happen. Omniscient doesn't mean knows what will happen. Knows all, but not doesn't necessarily know what will happen. Maybe God does. On that issue, I'm agnostic. I don't know if God knows what people will do. I think God knows what animals will do because they don't have free will. And my basis is biblical. It says God became very sad when he saw how bad people were. That's before the flood. Well, how could God become sad if he knew how bad people would turn out? How could he get disappointed? So that's my basis. But there's definitely, in fact, if there's no God, there is no free will. That's the point. If we're just physical beings, then everything we do is the result of physical things, neurological impulses, and biological conditions, and environment. So there's no free will. It's all genes and environment. Only if there is a God is there part of us that is not physical. And that is what enables us to have free will. All right, two more. Grace from Burbank, California. Is there no age on Grace?
She's
17. 17? Also Prager Force, bless you. Does feminism have a role to play in why chivalry is dead? Listen, in my view, feminism has a role to play in why a lot of good things are dead. I mean, if feminism means men and women are equal, then who's not, you know, you have to be a barbarian not to be a feminist. Of course men and women are equal. You know, God created the human being, male and female, he created them. From the beginning, the biblical view is that men and women are equal. Honor your father and mother, not just honor your father. Your mother is equal in stature and status to your father. But otherwise, the movement, I can't say it's done only bad. No movement does only bad, or very few movements. But it's largely been harmful, especially to men and women. I think the more feminist a woman is, the less happy she is. And anything that creates unhappiness is generally not that healthy. One day I'll talk more about that. And finally, Devin 18 in Miami, Florida. Who was your mentor growing up? Who taught you the most? Whoa, good one. Well, I would say my father had a real impact because he's a strong man, and I like that. And he was not Mr. Warmth, I will admit that. But he was strong, and he was very ethically concerned. He talked about ethical stuff a lot, and that had a big impact on me. And other than my dad in that way, there were a few teachers in my religious school that had an impact. Not many, but a few. But I will say that, you know, a direct mentor was not, I can't really think of others, even though other people played a wonderful role in my life. My biggest mentor are these five books that I'm writing a commentary on. That's why I'm writing the commentary. These five books have been the biggest mentor in my life. I think they're ultimately from God, and I think their wisdom is unsurpassed. When I had problems with my parents, and a lot of young people do, I always treated them with great respect. I called my parents every week that they were alive, and they died in their 90s. Even when I had troubles with them or even anger at them. And there was only one reason. Because I believed God commanded, honor your father and mother. It doesn't come with an asterisk that says only if you're really close with them. That had a big impact on me. So that's what, that's been my biggest mentor. So that's why I hope you'll get also the Rational Bible. You'll see why I explain there. These things are very powerful. I'll give you one more example. This commentary is on the second book. It's on one book, it's on the second book, Exodus. And for those of you who don't know, the Pharaoh, the demigod, the man god of Egypt, told the Egyptian people to kill every Hebrew male that was born. Drown them in the Nile. And it tells the story about two midwives, and they refused the Pharaoh's orders to kill all the Israelite boys. And it says why? Because they feared God. And I learned at a very young age, just from that story, every human has fears. So the question in life is not, will you have fears? It's whom you will fear or what you will fear. I opted to fear God and not people. And that was it's what gives me a lot of the courage that I have to say what I believe and, you know, get a lot of bad things said about me. Because I care what people think, but I care more about what God thinks. So these are powerful lessons. So let's see, for PragerU, for Prager University, I'm Dennis Prager. Please pass the videos on. They're very powerful. They're 5 minutes. And I am headed to Australia, where I'm giving a lecture to the Jewish community in Melbourne, Australia next week. I'll only be there 3 days. I'm just going to give a speech and coming back. So I will actually be back for the next fireside chat. I will have flown 16 hours nonstop, and I may be asleep, but I will do this next week. Thank you for being with me.